Welcome to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
It's going to be a dogfight. You know, both have great opportunities in front of us. And, you know, we both want it, so it's going to be a war.
I ain't forgot. They said I remember the talk. I'm getting bread, so it's what you thought.
The way three on the way. Got it, Jimmy Buckets. Another 5 minutes of play. The step back. Kemba Walker giving Boston the lead. Into traffic, got it, and one. Jimmy Butler delivering.
And they get it done at the defensive end.
Blocked at the rim by Bam.
Not in my house.
The Heat win game one.
That's why he's the heart and soul of our team, right there.
I seen a lot, did a lot, I ain't forgot.
Welcome to The Jump. We are coming to you live. Yes, you can see us here in the arena, on the court, at the NBA bubble here at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex at Walt Disney World, Florida. I'm Rachel Nichols, and I got a couple of NBA champs joining me today. Richard Jefferson here with me in the bubble through the finals, and the one and only Mr. Kendrick Perkins coming to us from his home in Texas. Welcome, Perk. All right, guys, coming up, we're going to dissect the Clippers' historic collapse against the Nuggets that culminated in a game seven.
No, not that.
Did not go well for them. Game seven blowout. Who is most to blame for the Clippers' early exit? We're handing out some blame pie here in a few minutes. First, though, we are honored to be the show unveiling the 2020 All-NBA teams right here on The Jump. Let's just start with the first team. LeBron James, a unanimous selection to the first team. LeBron sets an NBA record with his 16th All-NBA team selection, passing 15-time All-NBA team selections Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kobe Bryant, and Tim Duncan. That is not a slouch list. He also extends his record for most first-team selections with 13. Giannis Antetokounmpo, also selected unanimously All-NBA first team. Giannis was named, of course, the NBA Defensive Player of the Year, named to an All-NBA team for the fourth time and his second consecutive first team honor. Next on the list, James Harden receiving 89 of a possible 100 first team votes. This is the sixth time Harden is selected to the first team. He also averaged more than 30 points a game for the third straight season. That is remarkable. Also first team selection for Anthony Davis, 75 first team votes. Davis joins LeBron as the only teammates on the first or second team. So that's a little spoiler alert for you. AD also, of course, finished second in the Defensive Player of the Year vote. And the final selection, 21-year-old Luka Doncic. He received 59 first team votes. Luka is the first player selected to the All-NBA first team in either his first or second season since Tim Duncan did it back in 1999, so that is good company, too. Doncic also becomes the sixth player named to All-NBA first team at age 21 or younger. And here's another good list. KD, LeBron, Tim Duncan, Rick Barry, and Max Zalofsky from back in the 40s. Anyone who had that on their bingo card gets a little prize. All right, Perk, how are you feeling about Luka making the first team All-NBA?
Rachel, I have zero complaints about Luka being on the first team. I thought about it for a while, and at first I was kind of mad that Jokic wasn't on that list. But looking at what Luka done throughout this season, putting up 29, 9, and 9, and his historic, and the way he balled out against the Clippers in the playoffs, the sky's the limit for the kid, and he's doing this at 21 years old. I have zero complaints. Well earned, well deserved.
Yeah, no, I like this. I think Luka, we talked about that 30-point triple-double month that he had. Really the season that he was having, and especially building off the Rookie of the Year. He was second in most improved voting, which I'm still a little iffy about that one, but I have no issue with him.
You didn't get into that argument
again? Yes, I have no issue. Well, yeah, the Rookie of the Year goes on to be an All-Star. I don't think that that's most improved.
He went on to be an MVP candidate
and
made first-team All-NBA.
Yes.
And the fact that no one else has done that.
Rookie of the Year and then continue to get better at.
Like, we're going to get into this again.
Okay, anyways, I have no problem with Luka Doncic being on that first team. I think it's very, very deserving.
All right, let's get to the All-NBA second team selections. Kawhi Leonard, Nikola Jokic, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, and Pascal Siakam on this list. Richard, what do you think about those faces in front of you?
I like this list. Again, Pascal Siakam and what they were able to accomplish in Toronto, growing and building, really improving. You want to talk about most improved. I think he improved from a role player to leading a team to the number two seed that everyone wasn't even sure if they were going to be a quote-unquote postseason team. Mm-hmm. So Chris Paul, what he did, everything, I have no problem with this list.
I have no problem also. I think Chris Paul being on the second team is well-deserved. Dame Dolla right there where he's supposed to be. One could argue that he should be on the first team, even Kawhi Leonard. But I have no problem with the first or second team.
All right,
yet,
well, let's
Rachel.
Move on to the
but
third
you know
team
I'm
then.
Have a problem,
Your
so.
All-NBA third team is composed of Jason Tatum, Jimmy Butler, Rudy Gobert, Ben Simmons, and Russell Westbrook. So, Kendrick, now that you know all the guys who made All-NBA, which player would you say is the biggest snub from this list?
Well, first of all, how did Rudy Gobert make it over Bam out of the Bayou? Look, that doesn't make sense to me. The best big man in the league right now is Anthony Davis and Jokic, and the next one is Bam. Bam is the most versatile big after those two, and I don't understand for the life of me how did he not make an NBA all-team NBA. He should at least be third in place of Rudy Gobert. The last time I said this on your show, Rachel, on the jump, the Utah Jazz fans went crazy on me on my social media, but this time I don't care. They can go crazy all they want because I got the goon squad to back me up.
Okay, perfect. Well, I'm the only person I'm going to talk about is Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid, I feel like, you know, I know he had it was a very unique season in Philly. There was a change not having Jimmy Butler. And this team, you know, even with the injury to Ben Simmons, they were able to grit it out. And I just really think that Joel Embiid deserved All-NBA. Now, when you watched him play and he played well, the things that he was able to do. Now, he got off to a little bit of a slow start because he was like, I'm going to take things more seriously this year. But I think that Joel Embiid is a top 15 player in this NBA without question.
And that's kind of one of the things, right? We've talked a lot about awards lately. Right, and what actually stands for what? Who's the best player? Does the MVP really tell you that? All-NBA is supposed to be about who are the 15 best players in the league. And it's not positionless yet, but the NBA certainly made a move this year toward making it that way with the fact that they gave you a ton of options for every player.
Now, the fact that Joel Embiid Joel Embiid has less votes than Chris Middleton for All-NBA. And look, Chris Middleton's an all-star. He's a great player, but the impact that Joel Embiid has on the floor to say that he is better than Joel Embiid by these numbers, that's just a little disappointing.
Right. I mean, for me, when I make my All-NBA vote, it is about who are the best 15 players in a given year as opposed to one particular stat category up or down.
Well, Richard and Rachel, this is not NBA 2K. Sometimes numbers could fool you. When you look at it from the eye test, to me, Chris Middleton was having one of his best seasons of his career. So I don't see nothing wrong with him having more votes than Joel Embiid. Sometimes I watch Joel Embiid, watch him during the game. Yes, he do have 30 and 15 on one end, but he's also giving up 45 points on the other end in pick and roll defense. So
well,
I have no problem
too.
With that.
Absolutely. Well, it's fun to have these lists. Love that the NBA gave us this announcement. And congratulations to everyone involved. All right, coming up, we got some basketball to talk about. The Clippers lost Game 7. So it's time for Richard Jefferson to serve up some blame pie. It's going to be good.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today.
We'll have game two of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Heat and Celtics tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Eastern, with the Heat up 1-0 in the series. NBA Countdown gets our coverage started at 6 on ESPN, Deportes, and the app. All right. There is no overstating about what we saw from the LA Clippers last night. Just an absolute, flat-out, catastrophic disaster. And that's not just because they lost. Yes, they were a team with championship expectations that got bounced in the second round. Yes, they have been thrust back so deeply in the Lakers' shadow, they may need a flashlight just to find the court at Staples Center next year. But losing, that's not a sin in itself. You go out there and compete. Sometimes you are going to lose. What is inexcusable is losing without competing. Losing after being up 3-1 with a double-digit lead in each of the series' final games. Losing without scoring a bucket for 7 minutes in the fourth quarter of a Game 7 when you have two of the league's top 10 players and have spent an entire year marketing your team with slogans like driven over given and squad over self. Losing after you have spent a big chunk of this restart trash-talking. And boy, did that come back to bite this team. Remember Paul George and Patrick Beverley getting into it with the Portland Trailblazers last month, first on the bench and then on Instagram, with Pat Bev saying Portland was destined for a 1-2-3 Cancun type of departure from the bubble? Well, as the Clippers were busy descending into a giant sinkhole last night, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum had a field day on Twitter, offering up invitations to not just Cancun, but several of Mexico's lovelier vacation destinations. First, CJ. Yo, Dame, you got an extra villa available in Cabo? Then Dame directly at Patrick Beverley. I guess I should extend this Cancun invite since I haven't made my arrangements yet. Then CJ, I'll bring the wine, weather nice as ever too. And CJ kept going. If they fly private, they can get into Mexico for sure. Should probably get the big jet. This was all just amazing, especially considering that the team that was doing the trash talking lost a whole round earlier than the team they were trash talking to. And that would normally feel hollow, except again, it's not the losing that was the sin. It was whether the Clippers showed any fight or not, a subject the Blazers are indeed experts in. And by the way, so are the Nuggets. Most of the chatter today will be about L.A., but no one should imply that Denver was just some lucky band of misfits who just happened to be on the court when the Clippers self-destructed. They have two flat-out fantastic players in Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, and a team spirit that is literally unprecedented. In the 74-year history of the NBA, the Nuggets are the only ones resilient enough to come back from 3-1 series deficits twice in one playoffs. It's remarkable. And after winning last night, Coach Mike Malone credited the way Denver has nurtured its talent and chemistry over the past few years. While at the same time, Clippers coach Doc Rivers was at the opposite podium talking about a lack of trust. Lou Williams went a step further, saying, quote, "We did have championship expectations and the talent to do it. I don't think we had the chemistry to do it, and it showed," unquote. So can the Clippers somehow develop that chemistry for next season? Sure. We have certainly seen teams rebound from big playoff stumbles before. But to do that, they're going to have to not just learn to play together better. They are going to have to show they know how to compete. So far, we have not seen it. And that is more disappointing than anything. Richard, it's sad it's come to this, but it is time for another installment of Blame Pie. Serve it up, please. Who gets the first slice and how large?
Well, personally, I feel like I should get the first slice because I picked them to win a championship. But this is not about me. This is about the Clippers. And the first one to me is Kawhi. We talked about this multiple times. If you have the best player on the floor, and he didn't play like the best player, but he is the best player, reigning Finals MVP, two-time Finals MVP, two-time Defensive Player of the Year. Everybody's having conversations about not is he the best player in the series, but is he the best player in basketball? And the way he played was very, very disappointing for himself also. So this is not it. But if you have this type of player, you can't have a fourth quarter performance the way you did. Next, it's Paul George and the supporting group. The supporting group, and I'm adding Paul George into the supporting group because Paul George still, he has to continue to prove that we know that he is a top 10 player in the regular season. We've seen it with Giannis. We've seen it with other players. But the way he just struggled at times, and I was sitting right here in that corner when he shot the ball off the side of the backboard. And when I tell you, I turned around and looked in the entire media session that has watched basketball for 50 years, all's eyes were big, like, oh my God, what is happening? So to me, that just lets you know that Paul George and the rest of the crew, and then even you see the contradiction. Paul George says it wasn't championship or bust, and Lou Williams is saying it was championship or bust. So they weren't even locked in on whatever their team message was. So that to me shows you that there was a disconnect. And I actually appreciate what Lou Williams said more than what Paul George said in that. And then lastly, Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers, who I think is one of the best coaches in leagues. I think he's one of the best player coaches also in all of entire American sports. He is a great coach, but you cannot have three three. There's only been 12 or I think it's 12 times that a team has come back from 3-1 in history, and you got three of them. 13 times that teams have come back from 3-1, and you've got three of them on your resume. You got almost a quarter of them on your own resume.
And okay, there's a little bit, though, of a sample size issue there. The man has been coaching for 20 years.
But what does that mean? So has Greg Popovich. Right. There's other coaches that have coached. So did Lenny Wilkins.
Like, I understand, there's a lot but Craig coaches. Popovich is probably not the bar that everybody
Doc
else has
Rivers,
to match up.
Doc Rivers knows the amount of respect that I have for him. But ultimately, that says something about your inability to make adjustments as a series progress. Because what happens is this. You knew that this team was able to come back from 3-1 because they had just done it before. So when all of a sudden you're at 3-1 and you see that momentum building, you have to have the ability to make adjustments. And if this has happened for you three different times, that means you struggle to make adjustments as a series progress.
All right, Perk, you like this pie, slices of pie? Do you disagree with any of them?
Well, here's the thing. Kawhi carried the Clippers all through the first round and part of this series also. He had one bad game. I mean, you can't ask the man to do everything. That's the reason that he's supposed to have a certified Robin and Paul George that I warned everyone about before the season started, that Paul George has a history of disappearing in the playoffs, which he did this past postseason. And when you look at Paul George in closeout games, he's shooting 33% from the field, 28% from the three. So did that shot surprise me that he shot it off the side of the backboard? Absolutely not. He always freezes up in the big moments. I thought he was trying to actually pass the ball to some person in the virtual stands. Rachel, wasn't you in the virtual part of the virtual fans yesterday? I seen you drinking a cold one, right? But listen, here's the thing. The Clippers, right? The Clippers are going to break this up. Whether you like it or not, I heard from an inside source, they are going to break this up. They are going to break this up.
Well, listen, Perk. Well, I agree with what you're saying. I'm not talking about how they got to this spot. Obviously, Kawhi played great in the first round. Paul George struggled a little bit in the first round, and he started building off of that. But here in this series, how they played in the first four games versus how they played in the last three, we can't give all of this criticism to Giannis, to James Harden, to all these other players. And Kawhi is coming off a great year. We have to start pushing some of this. Like, this is not what, if you're going to give everybody the number one title, this just can't happen.
And RJ, I'm not saying that Kawhi doesn't deserve some criticism, but look, Lou Will and Montrezl Harrell couldn't guard a parked car last night or in this series. Lou Will was horrible on the offensive end. He was so worried about trademarking his lemon pepper wings that he forgot what his. And that's to provide a bench production. And I'm telling you, like I said before, mark my words, they're going to break this team up. You just bet.
If you believe that that's what they're going to do, Perk, then I 100% trust you. But I just believe that you can build off this. It is a championship or bust, but it's not the group championship or bust. The group can grow. The group can build. They can use this stuff for opportunities for the future.
Look at you guys right now. You disagree, and yet the chemistry and the love and the family is still good. So it can happen. All right, guys, coming up, what was your biggest takeaway from Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals? We're going to discuss that next, but first, enjoy a little Jump at the Symphony, courtesy of Bam Adebayo.
Tatum out front, clock at 7, working against Butler, got downhill. Couldn't punch it, Bam says get it out of here.
That is a ridiculous defensive play.
Imagine if you knew that as a child, bro. Nostalgia, how I remember things, remember crowns.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today. And in part by Domino's. Try Domino's new chicken taco and cheeseburger specialty pizzas.
We are so lucky to be here. It is crunch time on the jump. The Raptors have signed Nick Nurse to a multi-year contract extension. Nurse, of course, named Coach of the Year last month. And Raptors president Masai Ujiri says our confidence in Nick just continues to grow. Kendrick, I know you love this Raptors team this season. What do you expect to see from Nurse going forward?
I expect him to be who he is, Rachel, and that's a great coach. The Coach of the Year. I was just trying to figure out what took him so long to back the Brinks truck up. He been deserved it. He should have got the contract extension right after he won the championship last year. Nick Nurse put this year's Raptor team in a position where no one thought they would be, probably except for yours truly, me. But, hey, I'm happy for Nick Nurse. Well deserved.
Yeah, no, I'm extremely happy. Nick Nurse is one of the best coaches in the league. Ultimately, I think he did a better job coaching this year than he did last year. So that's impressive by him.
Absolutely. All right. The NBA has moved this year's draft. It's official now, November 18th. The new date allows the league maximum time to iron out the salary cap situation, gives teams more time to facilitate trades around the draft and free agency. The league said the date is, quote, subject to change as circumstances warrant, which, I mean, in 2020 has to go at the end of every sentence. Richard, how much are you looking forward to the draft, though?
I'm looking forward to the draft because you got the Golden State Warriors that have a very high pick, and you want to see, you know, you got Ball. You got a lot of players out there that can make some impacts, you know, and help decide what's going to happen next year in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm right there, Richard. I'm right there with you, RJ. I'm looking forward to see what Philly and the New York Knicks are going to do. Knowing that, you know, Kyle Lowry, I've been hearing rumors that he might be heading to Philly. Maybe Toronto land LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball is the stud in this draft, in my opinion, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Kendrick watches the draft like no other analyst we have at the pro level. I'm excited for it. All right, guys, this is what my time. Hey, watch. Oh, yes. Bring it out. Come on, you got to bring out the Photoshop. No, the producers, they don't love me. Gordon Hayward was out last. There we go. They do love me. They do.
Oh, that's amazing.
Out last night as he continued his recovery from an ankle sprain. Brad Stevens says he's expected back at some point in the Eastern Conference Finals. And on Monday, he said he looked, quote, good doing a hard workout. So, Kendrick, how could Gordon Hayward help your Celtics team against the Heat?
Well, Rachel, they're my Celtic team at heart, but you know I'm riding with the Goon Squad. But Gordon Hayward could help them. Gordon Hayward could help them off the bench. Right now, the way that Marcus Smart is playing, he's playing like the MVP of that team. He's been the most consistent, and I just don't see Brad taking them out of the starting lineup. So I see him bringing – I see Brad bringing in Hayward off the bench to bring in
Look,
the spark.
Man, we can't just gloss over his Wyatt Earp Doc Holliday mustache. That thing is gorgeous, Gordon. Good for you. I wish I could grow that type of mustache. But, look, coming off the bench would be great. Those 10 to 15 minutes until he builds up, you know, the ability to really play big minutes, that's what they should do. But those guys need it. They have so many guys that are playing 39-plus minutes. That break would be huge for those guys.
Absolutely. All right, guys, I want to revisit the Clippers, who, of course, blew a 3-1 lead to the Nuggets, in case you haven't heard enough about that by now. This was considered to be a championship roster. So, Perk, where do the Clippers go from here? What changes, if any, are necessary?
The bench. You gotta change the bench. Reggie Jackson got to go. Montrezl Harrell got to go. And Lou Will got to go. None of those guys provided the production that the Clippers needed. Lou Will was MIA for the entire playoffs. And Reggie Jackson had got benched a couple of times where he got DMP. So they need to look to upgrade their bench. I'm sorry, Lou Will just don't have it anymore.
Perk, I love you to death. You my guy. But did you just say they need to replace the 2 6 men of the year, like the last? Look, they don't need to make any changes. What they need to do is they need to just run it back. I believe that this team has all the talent to run it back. They need to have some more continuity. They need to work on some things. But Doc Rivers is a great coach. They have a very good bench, and they have a ton of talent up top. But they all need to play better, and Doc needs to actually do some more improvements and adjustments.
No, this is not a popularity contest, RJ. Just because they have the household name,
I mean,
that
look,
don't
part
make
of the question
good,
about whether
okay?
you replace Montrezl or Lou
good.
Is who are you replacing them with?
No
they
one.
They just don't have that much flexibility to do that kind of thing right now because they gave all their future picks to Oklahoma City. Their salary is, you know, that cap is all stacked up. Now, they would have a mid-level exception, but it's not a great free agency class coming out. They have a couple pieces they could move around, but that's always my question when people say, we need to change the coach, we need to change the bench, we need to change the players. Who are you changing them for? So it's going to be a tricky problem.
There's no one, Rach. What you got to do is you got to allow this team to grow, like a lot of championships teams do. You look at the Miami Heat, and they lost in the finals, and then they went to three more finals, and they won two championships. You still have to give this team time to grow and to gel together.
No. When you form a super team, it's either championship
or bust. Not in one year. Not
these
in year one. It is championship or bust, but not in year one.
RJ, these guys are not in their 20s. We're talking about guys that are 30-plus years old, guys that are in double-digit years in the league. It's championship or bust. You think that Steve Ballmer traded away all those picks to bring in Paul George? To say that this year was just a sample size type thing and we're going to wait till next year? No, their expectations this year was to win
the
championship.
It can be that this year was a huge disappointment and the prescription to try to change things for next year isn't to tear up the whole thing. Those two things can be true simultaneously. And again, to me, it just depends on what your options are. I'm not saying that the Clippers front office can't pull a rabbit out of its hat. We've certainly seen them do that before. But it will be a challenge. It is a challenge to move pieces around, especially right now for this team this offseason. I do want to get to the team that is advancing in the Western Conference Finals. Nuggets guard Jamal Murray called out the media after the win last night. Take a listen.
You got Shaq, you got Charles, you got, I think, Zach Lowe's the name. I don't even know. Stephen A., all y'all better start giving this team some damn respect because we put in the work and we got a resilient team. And, you know, we should have been down 3-1, but... You know, to come back from 3-1 against the Clippers, it was a big achievement.
Richard, I'm supposed to ask you after that, how worried should the Lakers be about the Nuggets? But that was your young rookie when you were in Denver. What do you have to say to that?
Well, let me say this, a couple of things. One, he is right and he is wrong at the exact same time. Jamal, you know my feelings towards you. But this is the thing. You had a chance to go to the postseason and you lost in a single game situation against Minnesota. Then the next year you go and you're up 3-2 and you have a game 7 at home and you lose to a shorthanded Portland Trailblazer. Then you're down 3-1 to the Utah Jazz. Then you go and understandably you're down 3-1 to the Clippers. So it's not like we haven't been given a sample size of why people should question whether or not you guys can finish this stuff off. But he is right. They need to start believing in what this team can do. And me personally, this is how concerned they should be. Jamal, you want people to start going to bat for you? I'll be the first one to fall on that sword. And I'm going to say the Denver Nuggets are going to win this series in 7.
Richard Jefferson.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, because this is the thing. If they're tired of people not giving them the credit, then I'll be the first one in the media to give you guys credit and say, I believe that you guys can make it to the NBA Finals, and I believe that it's going to be done in 7 games.
What do you got, Perk?
Well, I believe you're dead wrong. You and Jamal Murray, and I got much respect for Jamal Murray. I think that he's a baby Gilbert Arenas. His game mimics Gilbert Arenas. I think Jokic is the best center of the league, but they're about to face LeBron James, who's the best player in the world, and Anthony Davis, who's the best power forward in the world. With all that championship experience and playoff rondo, I got the Lakers in 6.
The Lakers in 6? Okay. Well, I got the Nuggets in 7. They have not given me any reason to doubt them thus far in the postseason, other than being down 3-1 a couple of times. But I'm not. I'm going to be the first one in the media to give them credit and say that they can do this in 7.
See, 2 good takes. I like both of those takes. Up next, we're breaking down an epic game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Should we expect the Heat to keep rolling? Stick around to find out.
Cue me in, do the clapping and be like, action. It's a make or miss league.
Maybe a little more funny than that.
I don't know what am I make or missing? It's a make or miss league. Cut that.
There's the Jimmy I know. Let's check out today's make or miss brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Make reunions, players being reunited with their kids is the best video out there right now. Not just the best in the bubble, but the best. Jason Tatum with his son Deuce, and then Dion Waiters with his son. Dion's son started crying when he hugged him.
Oh, that part is tough, man. I promise you. Like, I've been away from my kids for a week and a half, and they're just like, Daddy, when are you coming back? And it's like, at some of these guys that have been here 60, 70 days, that's a pretty intense tour that they're going on right now.
Pretty awesome to watch these.
Best feeling in the world. Best feeling in
the
world.
So good. And then Deuce at the game last night was amazing.
Yes.
Star of the Celtics game. All right, miss folding. Nikola Jokic dropped a cool 16, 22, and 13 for his second career Game 7 triple-double. So, Richard, you played with him for a year in Denver. What was it like?
Well, I got to watch him play a lot that year. He is amazing. He's such a unique player, right? When you see great players in this league, they're a combination of things that typically that you haven't seen before, right? Whether it's Giannis, James Harden ability to score. He is just as unique, man. And like the way he had 22 rebounds, this man can't jump. Cannot jump. He cannot jump more than 3 inches. He had like 4 dunks all year and he had 22 rebounds. That shows you his feel and touch and his ability to see the game is just something that we might not have ever seen.
Well, look, he said that one of the best things that happened to him is that he figured out very early in his career that he is not fast or athletic and was able to play to his strengths instead. All right, make clutch gene Jimmy Butler. Looked like James Butler yesterday, although we learned in Philadelphia last year. That's not his name. Clutch three from the corner and then the huge and one in OT. Perk, I know you love Jimmy's resolve out there.
Absolutely. You know he's a H-Town, Texas boy. He's going to bring that heat, and Jimmy Butler is getting it straight to the paint. Getting to the paint, getting aggressive and one, going to the free throw line. Earning three the hard way. That's how we do it, RJ and Rachel. That's how we do it down here in Texas.
I ain't gonna argue with you. The way Jimmy's played really the last couple of years has just been impressive. Good for him.
He's got it, man. That dog is in the fight.
That's it.
All right, Miss Gimmies, time to revisit Bam's block. Richard, where does this rank in all-time playoff blocks? Where would you put it?
It is very, very, very high. Like, again, I can't act like I know all of the NBA history, but it's one of the top 5 blocks that I've ever seen. We are talking about an overtime, Jason Tatum going up. And this is the thing. Normally, you see verticality.
Yep.
Like, now guys have to actually go and get blocks. And so that block by Bam is something that we rarely see in the league, so it makes it even that much more impressive.
What, Rachel? It's a top 2. LeBron is number 1, that big time block against Golden State. But this ranks number 2. People don't understand, as a shot blocker, Richard was But for him to go get that with his opposite hand, his left hand, in
That's
that crucial moment.
Crazy.
And he wasn't afraid of embarrassment. He wasn't afraid to get dunked on. Like, he was like, no, I'm going to make this play. Like, that was phenomenal. But RJ don't know nothing about that.
That's fair, first of all. But also, I do think the fact that it was his offhand is just part of what made it so phenomenal. The strength, right? Jason Tatum cocked back and the ball was in the cylinder. I mean, it was incredible. And I agree with you on the LeBron block just because that's the final 5 minutes of a Game 7 in an NBA Finals. But man, this is right up there and so impressive considering Bam's just youth and his able to just have the right moment to should be so mature and do the right thing.
Game 5, 04, Detroit. Check it out.
We'll stay with the Eastern Conference. Did you win that series, Richard?
I'm just saying. He said, I don't know nothing about blocks.
Richard, what did you learn after watching the Heat pull off this overtime thriller?
That this is going to be an amazing series. Like, I wasn't able to pick. They were asking me, who's going to win this game? I was like, I don't know. But one thing that I do know is that this is going to come down to who can make shots in the last 90 seconds of 2 minutes, because they're both disciplined teams, they're both well-coached, and they have a variety of guys that can make plays. So I just don't see a lot of blowouts, but they think this series is going to go 6 or 7, and it's going to be who plays best in the last 90 seconds.
Well, I learned that Goran Dragic is probably one of the most underrated players in this postseason. We don't talk about him enough. He's averaging 21 points on 50% shooting and 40% from the three. He has been one of Miami's most consistent players throughout this playoffs, and we haven't talked about him. He's flat out outplayed Kemba Walker last night on both ends of the floor. So I was more impressed by the player Goran Dragic.
Yeah. Well, I agree, Perk. I agree that Goran Dragic is a very underrated player for the Miami Heat.
And playing so well in this moment, and he's had an up and down sort of last year, I would say, with them, but really, really such a key part of their success right now. All right, guys, coming up, who is the best player on the planet right now? Perk is hot on this one, so you will definitely want to stick around for that. But first, well, just stick around for that.
We're going to stick around for that. I'll be here.
Do that.
I got nowhere else to go. I don't jump,
I dive in it. Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
National Voter Registration Day is September 22nd. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
5.8 to go. Washington leads by two. Here's Diggins Smith. Diggins Smith double. Tosses to the corner. A three is good at the buzzer. Shea Petty buries a three against the team that cut her. And Phoenix is moving on.
The WNBA playoffs continue Thursday with two single elimination second round games on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. The Mercury take on the four-seeded Lynx at 7 Eastern. Then the seven-seeded Suns square off against the third-seeded Sparks. It's winner go home in the wobble. And guys, the 2020 WNBA playoffs already off to an unbelievable start. But tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. on The Jump. You will check out some of the league's top performers get awarded for their achievements, including the league MVP. Going to be another big day on The Jump. All right, here's another look at the 2020 All-NBA First Team, which was announced at the top of this show. Richard, these five players are all worthy of First Team honors due to their impact this season, but I am curious to know, which player from this list would you most want leading your team next season?
Oh, that's tough. Well, look, there's two players to pick from that are still standing, and that's LeBron James and Anthony Davis. But I'm still going to have to go with Bron. You know, the way you could see his game evolve, and you can see that he led the league in assists. That's something that he hadn't done before. And it's just still impressive, averaging double-digit assists. And it just shows that he needed to evolve his game. And I think he can evolve his game around lots of players. And I think that's why players have teamed up with him over the years.
Well, Richard, to end the show, I'm going to have to agree with you. Rachel, I got to agree with Richard for once in a lifetime. I got to go with LeBron James. I mean, he to us, yeah, we know that he's getting older, but it don't seem that way on the court. In my opinion, he looked like the LeBron James back in Miami. The way that he's chasing down blocks on the defensive end, the way that he's being explosive to the basket, the way that he's playing right now, he took out the Houston Rockets. He snatched their souls from them. You're talking about two MVPs still in their prime and Russell Westbrook and James Harden, and LeBron James made them look like, you know, it was boys amongst men. All due respect to the Brodies, you know I love those two, but he was just clearly the better player on the floor. He's clearly the best player in the world, and I will still build around him next season if I had a player to choose from.
Yeah, no, Perk, I agree completely. Look, he's not 0-10 LeBron, but he is still dominant, and he still has that mental IQ, that basketball IQ, the ability to adjust his game. I look at the rest of the group. Giannis struggles a little bit to end games. James Harden, you still have questions about. Anthony Davis is on his own team, but you know we still haven't seen Anthony Davis have that dominant playoff success, and Luka Doncic is still young. So we're just going off the first team All-NBA, right? Everybody's got a few things that you would need to build around, but I think LeBron James is still the most complete player on this list.
All right, now I'm going to raise the degree of difficulty of this question, though. So, Perk, you looked at those five, and you picked LeBron. What about Steph and KD? Where do they fit into that group for who you would want next year if you had to pick first on your team?
Well, I will still go with LeBron James because I don't know how KD is going to come back off the Achilles injury. If I watch the first couple games in preseason and KD is healthy, ask me that question again, Rachel, and it's going to be Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant healthy is arguably the best player in the world right now. He's the best scorer of all time, in my opinion, in NBA history. His defense is underrated, and you would just have to start with Kevin Durant. 7-foot guy that could score a bucket anywhere on the court that has zero flaws offensively, I'm taking them all day.
I completely agree. That was the one thing that I think we missed out this season, not getting a Kevin Durant, because Kevin Durant is the one player that I truly believe can actually take the crown and say that he is the best player, because it's about playoff performance, but it's also about your ability. Kevin Durant has no holes in his game. He can post up. He can shoot deep. He can knock down the late free throws. He can create, and he can do things on the defensive end that his defense has improved over the last 5 years. So he is the one player, to me, that has all of the tools. Like, we talked about Giannis, you know, late in games. We talked about James Harden and his ability. So there's just too many guys out there. Kevin Durant is the one guy that has no holes in his game at this point that could be the best player in the world as soon as he's back healthy.
I mean, look, Kevin Durant was definitely on the path to take that crown from LeBron last year before he got hurt. And then he got hurt. LeBron wasn't even in the playoffs last year. And then Kevin doesn't play at all this season. And LeBron is making this super impressive run. It's fun to watch. Mm. All right, here's a look at the all-rookie first and second teams, headlined by Ja Morant, who is the only unanimous selection. He's joined by Kendrick Nunn, Brandon Clark, Zion, and Eric Pascal. Tyler Hero anchors the second team, along with Terrence Davis, the third. Kobe White, P.J. Washington Jr., and Rui Hachimura. Kendrick, which rookie do you expect to have the best sophomore season?
Rachel, you already know the answer to this. The rookie that I told you I would have took with the number one pick, and that's Ja Morant. He's a generation of talent in a guard-driven league. I think he's a mixture. He has the athleticism of a Russell Westbrook. He has the handles of a Kyrie Irving. And he have the passing ability of a Rajon Rondo, and he's a leader. This guy showed us nothing but great leadership and that he wants to get better. Putting on 12 pounds of muscle during the pandemic shows me that he's dedicated. Having Memphis in that eighth spot in the Western Conference before the pandemic showed me that he's a true leader, and I'm taking Ja Morant.
So I'm going to go a different route. I agree. I think Ja Morant's going to make the same type of – shut up, Perk. I know he's going to make the same type of jumps that Luka made from year one to year two. I think he can do that. But I'm going to say the Porter Jr. brothers that aren't brothers and there's no relation. I'm going to talk about Kevin Porter Jr. and Michael Porter Jr. Kevin Porter Jr.
Do you know the difference between them yet?
I do. Because Kevin Porter Jr. is in a space in Cleveland with J.B. Bickerstaff as his head coach, and he's going to have room to grow and really improve. So I think we can see a jump. And I think Michael Porter Jr., after having a year of basketball, able to work on his own, he is the starting three man for the Denver Nuggets. He's going to have an ability to really prove what he can do on the scoring end. So I think those two rookies will become household names next year.
Here's what I like. Did you see that tweet from Ja Morant? He's not forgetting that someone did not vote for him for Rookie of the Year. So that man is motivated. All right. Thanks to all of you guys for sifting through our technical difficulties today. Thanks to Richard and Perk for joining me. See ya.